Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I'm doing an interview with a singer named Bert Bowen, who was a member of a couple of groups from the South Side of Chicago, specifically the Chanteurs and the Presidents. But the reason it's going to be an especially important and interesting interview is that they are groups that evolved into the Shy Lights. So it'll give insight into the background history of what was going on in the really, really early years of what happened following up to the group that became the groups that became the Shy Lights. And I'm going to have to dedicate this interview to the memories of Eugene Record and Robert Earl Lester, who were members of the groups that Bert was a member of. So first of all, thanks so much, Bert, for coming to, down to the station.
Okay, thank you for inviting me, Bob. I'm glad to be here.
So, and another cool thing about your groups is they're actually from all really close to where the station is.
Right, right. We, I was from near Englewood, and Gene and I, and Squirrel and Clarence Johnson, they lived Minerva, Marquette between Woodlawn and University, and the spot under the street lamp that was 65th and Woodlawn, where we used to kick that butt.
Okay, so right, pretty much a few blocks from here is where
right,
you guys got
right,
started out.
Right, right.
So let's back up even a little further, and let me ask. So were you born in Chicago?
Yes, I was.
And where's the first place you lived in Chicago?
62nd and Langley, 6233 South Langley Avenue, 14 years. The youngest of three, two boys and a girl. I was the youngest. And my schooling was at the old Holy Cross Catholic School on 66 in Maryland. And Eugene Record went to St. Anselm. And Clarence Johnson and Robert Earl Squirrel, they went to Wadsworth, and we were all very young, but we were good.
And how did you get involved with music originally?
Well, I've always had a talent for either comedy or singing, and I started singing in the choir at Holy Cross School. My brother and sister and I, we were some of the first blacks to integrate Holy Cross in 47. That's when blacks were moving on the east of Cottage. And that's when Cottage Grove was really the hot spot. 63rd and Cottage, everything was up there. All the night spots, anything and everybody you wanted to see, just go up on 63rd and Cottage and go east or west or north and south, and you would find it. All the famous jazz places, dance places, everything. That's when Chicago was really popping. 63rd Street was the place.
And there was a bunch of clubs there, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
The Tree and On Ballroom was
yeah.
there.
Yeah, that was, in fact, that was one of our first gigs. I discovered Gene. I had wandered off. I used to go to A.O. Sexton School right there on 60th and Langley. And that island before you get to Washington Park, going north, Gene was living on 60th and St. Lawrence. And I wandered off from the house. I must have been about 11. And I wandered off, and I seen a whole group of young people. They were doo-wopping. And I would step up, and I heard them, and I tried to doo-wop. Every time I stepped up, they would push me back, step up, push me back. So when they found out I had a knack, you know, that was the beginning of the whole thing. Gene and I met, and that's when we started. We started practicing over his house on 60th and St. Lawrence. And there was a fellow named DeWitt Garth that used to live right on the corner of 60th and St. Lawrence. He was the lead singer for a while. Then we morphed into the Five Wrens. And that's where it really began. It was me, Eugene Record, Jerry Harden, Jerry Norris, Curry Durham, and myself.
So you originally just kind of ran into them at Washington Park, you were saying? They were just singing in Washington Park. And you ran into them and you tried to sing and they tried to knock you away and you just persisted.
I persisted.
What were they like? What kind of stuff were they singing?
Oh, you know, the typical doo-wop stuff, like the Clovers, the Spaniels, the Eldorados, all the good old groups.
Okay.
You know, all the good groups, Eldorados, Spaniels, Clovers.
Do you remember what year you encountered them in Washington Park?
I was if I tell you that, I'd be telling my age. No, I was actually about 11 years old when I first met Jane. And 12 years old when we did our first professional gig at the Trianon. We were called the Five Wrens. And at that time, our manager was a famous black model at that time in the early mid-50s named Cordy King. She used to live right there on 62nd and King Drive. She was our manager, and she got us at the Trianon.
How did you end up? You weren't even in high school yet, right?
Right.
So how did you end up getting a manager and like a professional gig just as a bunch of kids?
Well, considering who it was, Eugene Record, I remember the first time I went over to Jane's house after we really started rehearsing and everything. His parents would buy him anything. I remember when Gene was about 12 or 13, his father bought him one of those real high-priced Gibson electric guitars. Gene didn't know how to play a lick. And his father would buy him everything. And we would go from my house to his house, 62nd and Langley to 60th and St. Lawrence. 60th St. Lawrence, 62nd and Langley. And then we would wander off, like, toward the boys' club. We were members of the boys' club. And then that's how we met Clarence and Squirrel. And then that's how we all came together.
So you did that gig at the Trianon Ballroom?
Right.
As the Five Wrens?
Right.
So what kind of stuff did you do? What kind of stuff, did you perform as the Five Wrens
at
that ballroom?
Right, we performed as the Five Wrens.
So what did you sing?
Oh, man, I can't even remember.
Like, was it pop material? Was it R&B?
No, it was R&B.
And was it to an adult audience?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were just in grammar school.
Right.
And it was a late show.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Was that the only show you guys did?
No, we did Clarence was more like our business manager at the time, too. And he would be getting us a gig. We were doing a few things, trying to get everything together.
You said Clarence Johnson was a member of the Five Wrens?
No, after the Five Wrens, we met Clarence and Squirrel, and then we became the Chanteurs.
Okay, well, just as the Five Wrens, how many did you do a bunch of shows?
No, just that one show. Just that one show.
So how long were the Five Wrens together?
Oh, maybe about a year or two.
So just in grammar school, you had a group. And you actually did a professional show, which is impressive for a grammar school group.
Right.
So then you said you ran into Clarence Johnson and Squirrel. How did you run into them?
Okay, that spot, that little island off of 60th Street, right before you go into Washington Park, they would come over there. I mean, it was kind of a meeting ground for anybody that wanted to sing doo-wop, you know, especially young people. I mean, it would be 50, 60, 70 people over there, you know, just listening around. So if I remember correctly, Clarence came over there. He was business-minded then. And Then we became members of the boys club because he was living on 64th and Minerva. And Squirrel was, Robert Earl Squirrel was living on Marquette between Woodline and Kimbard. And we got together. I can't remember exactly how we got together, but we got together and that's when we found out about the Desiderals. That was Marshall Thompson's group.
Okay.
And they used to challenge us.
So you had you formed a group, the new group, the Chanteurs, by that
right,
point?
Right. We had became the Chanteurs then.
So the Five Wrens had broken up,
right,
and the new group, the Chanteurs, had formed.
Right.
So what was the lineup of the Chanteurs?
It was me, Clarence Johnson, Robert Earl Lester, Eddie Reed, and Squirrel.
So the only member from the Five Wrens who was in the Chanteurs was Eugene Record.
Right, Eugene Record.
And all of everybody met at that little area near Washington
right,
Park.
Right.
Did a lot of other groups form in that little area?
I don't know, but it was a place on 62nd and Cottage, not too far from the Tree and I, called the Railroad Union Hall, where all the groups, basically, because we liked the acoustics in the hallway. It was the upstairs, but the bottom floor had the acoustics. We used to go in Railroad Union Hall and practice because it had such beautiful acoustics. And we would see the Dandeliers up there. I think the Dells came through there a couple of times, but they just liked to just sneak in and just practice in the hall. Sometimes the security would come out and tell us we had to go.
Okay.
You know, but it was fun. And we loved the Cooties at Railroad Union Hall right there, not too far from the Trend on 62nd Cottage.
And do you know if Squirrel or Clarence or if they had any previous group to your group also, like, or
not that I know of.
Okay.
I really don't know. You know, like I said, I think when I met Clarence and Squirrel, I might have been maybe 13, 14.
Were you in high school at that point?
I graduated. I was getting ready to go into high school.
Were you all about the same age?
Right, right.
And were you all about to go to the same school?
No, we all went to different schools. See, what people don't know, I was going to Holy Cross Catholic Grammar School. Eugene Record, he went to St. Anselm Catholic School. That's where he graduated from, and he went on to go to St. Elizabeth Catholic High School to graduate from there. And I went to Parker and Hyde Park. I never did finish, but it was pretty good. It was pretty good.
But did other members go to Hyde Park? Or?
Yeah, Squirrel went to Hyde Park. All the Desiderals went to Hyde Park.
Okay.
I went to Hyde Park at a later date. I didn't go when they were going there.
And what year did the Chanteurs form?
It had to be, it had to be 55 or 56.
Okay. So you all formed in that same area around
right,
near Washington
right,
Park.
Right, right.
And then
we started going to the Boys Club, Woodlawn Boys Club.
Where was the Woodlawn Boys Club?
Right there on 63rd and University.
Okay.
Right there on City for a long time.
And why did you go to the club? It was a good place to practice.
Right, it was a good place to practice and had all kind of activities, you know, for young folks, ping pong, shooting pool, you know, just activities, you know, something for young kids to do.
And you guys all live near each other also.
Right, right. Basically. Especially Clarence and Robert Earl. They basically live almost around the corner from each other. I was the one, Gene and I, we were the only ones that were kind of out of Woodlawn because he was on 60th and St. Lawrence, and I was on 62nd and Langley.
So you were farther west?
Right.
Okay. And then so you just started talking a little bit about how you had a rival group. So what's the story with that?
Oh, you talk about the Desiderio?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, after they found out.
So who were the Desiderios?
Marshall Thompson, Creel Jones, Eddie Sullivan, Dale Brown, and I forget the other fellow's name. But they used to challenge us all the time right there on the 65th and Woodlawn, up under them street lamps. And we used to kick their butt all every time they opened their mouth. They couldn't believe it. They could not believe it. And it was fun. It was fun. And I'm glad you bring back these memories, what few I can remember, because that was a long time ago.
So if they told the story, would it be the reverse?
No, it would be the same thing. No pun intended. But if Marshall heard it, he would probably tell a different story.
Okay, so it's interesting. But Eddie Sullivan didn't live close to you guys because he was from Altgeld Gardens
right,
at the time.
Right.
So you were together for a while before you ended up recording, because that was like the mid-50s
right,
Chanteurs got together.
Right.
So what's the story? The Chanteurs didn't end up recording until like 1960, where they recorded a record called Wishing Well on Leo Austell's LaSalle record label. And you're not on that record, right?
Yeah, well, at that time, I was going through a few personal things, you know, family, mother and father. And I was the youngest of three. And I just wasn't there. I was in and out the group a couple of times. But at that time, Leo Austell and Solly McElroy, which was my idol because he was the original member of the Flamingos, the lead singer, they wanted him to take my place. And Leo Austell, I don't want to say anything bad about him, but he was kind of flaky in a way. But they didn't trust me because I had been out in and out of the group a couple of times. And they didn't want me back. The only one that kept me going was Clarence Johnson and Squirrel and Gene, you know, through all the problems I was going through. But when I got back with them, that was the President's.
Okay, so the first record the group did was Wishing Well. Let me play the record so we'll have that in the story, and then we can play the record that you did with them after.
Okay, fine.
So this is the first record that the Chanteurs did without Bert singing on it, but this is Solly McElroy, who you just noted was in the Flamingos and
right.
was in the Maracos also.
Right.
So he took your place in the group.
Right.
He actually sings lead on this record, is that right?
Right.
So this came out in 1960. This is the Chanteurs with Wishing Well.
Let's
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just the Chanteurs with Wishing Well. If you're just tuning in, I have original member of the Chanteurs and the president's, Bert Bowen, in here telling the story of his group. And as we just noted, that record actually doesn't have Bert singing on it. That has Sally McElroy singing on it. So going up to the point of that record, the Chanteurs had been together for about 5 years, actually. And you had been in and out the group a few times.
Right.
And at that point, you were out the group for a short period of time.
Right.
And had been replacing the group by Sally McElroy,
right,
who was previously in the Flamingos and the Moroccos.
Right, right.
So the period where you were in the group, when the group was together for 5 years, did the group do a lot of shows?
It wasn't a lot, because, you know, we was trying to find that gold ring. But a couple of shows we did, I have very fond remembrances. We did one, it had to be at least 57, 58, over at Ida B. Wells' field house. And Curtis Mayfield was the band leader. They had Howlin' Wolf on the show. They had the Debonairs. They were there, and I forgot what song we sang, which was so long ago, but they had to give Howlin' Wolf the hook, because he was taking up everybody's time. He wanted to do the whole show.
Okay.
And they had to tell him to get off so they could make room for everybody else. And we did pretty good. We kept that name going, the Chanteurs. But the biggest one was when we did senior varieties up at Hyde Park, since we were all alumni from Hyde Park. I think it was the senior varieties of 1958. They had the Dells, the Cool Gents, the Moroccos with Solly, the Spaniels, the Eldorados, and I forgot the name of the group that made up on the mountain.
The Magnificence.
The Magnificence. But we did a no-no to show you how good we were. We did a no-no. Whenever you do a show, you are not supposed to sing the song of the people that's on the show with you.
Okay.
We did that with the Dells, and we were so up on it. And we did just the Dale song, I Want to Go Home. And we were so good, we sounded just as good as they did, or even better. But they didn't like it. They didn't like it. They didn't say anything, but you could tell by the looks on their face. But another thing that was so funny, we was giving fives and everything. And, you know, in the break where everybody be dancing and everything and doing their steps and everything, well, we were throwing our bow ties off in the audience and everything, all that jive. And, we took down. I found my bow tie. Didn't nobody want, man. it was on the floor behind some seats. I felt kind of not wanted then. But everybody else, they picked up their bow ties, and I say, oh, they got mine. I found mine. It was right there on the floor behind some seats. I kind of felt bad, but it was fun. It was fun.
Did you have a signature style or song that you did for your shows?
Not really, because Eugene Record, he was the type of person. Any song we sang, he could emulate the lead singer. He could sound like the lead singer, no matter what group it was.
Okay.
He could sound like him, and our harmony was so tight, it was unbelievable. Plus, at that time, before the president, when we were so young, when we was kicking that butt up under the streetlights, we was bad then.
And I never asked what part each person sang also. Can you tell what part each person sang?
Okay, I was baritone. Clarence Johnson was second tenor. Squirrel was first tenor. Gene was lead singer and first tenor when Squirrel was singing lead. And we had Eddie Reed, the great Eddie Reed. He was at least five, maybe four, between 4 and 6 years older than us. And he was one of those good old country boys, loved to sing gospel, and he had that bass. And Eddie was one of the best basses that I have ever heard. They be talking about a whole lot of the basses, like my boy that was in the Temptations, and a whole lot of great basses, but they never heard Eddie Reed.
Okay. And Clarence obviously later became better known as a record producer,
right,
doing like Love Jones.
Right.
Was he a really good singer?
He was a good singer, but he was about like I was. He didn't like the lead sing, you know, because he and I, we were the backbone. He, I, and Squirrel, we were the backbone of the background. And us three, we were so tight that it was unbelievable. We couldn't believe ourselves sometimes.
Okay. So, you were together for about 5 years before your recording came out.
Right.
And then, so did that Chanteur's recording, which the one Wishing Well, did that get any play in Chicago?
I don't know. I don't know, because at that time, when that was out, I was raising a family, because I got married young, and I mean real young. And I was in and out of singing up until I got back with them. And then we morphed into the Presidents, which we had to change our names because it was a conflict after we found out it was a group called the Presidents that made 5, 10, 15.
But that was much later, though, that Presidents.
Yeah, but still, they were out then. You know, they had a name then.
Okay.
You know, but
so
they had a patent. So that's why we had to change our name.
I never even asked how you came up with the name The Chanteurs. Who came up with that name?
Clarence Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah, he came up with it.
So who came up with the name The Presidents?
Clarence.
Okay.
I mean, Clarence was everything. That was him and Squirrel. They were two of the. Well, Gene, but Clarence was the business manager, like, and he kept things together, and he did everything. He got the gigs. He kept everybody in line. I remember one time we had a couple of fights. things were going so bad at one time. We had a couple of fights, but it turned out all right. It turned out all right.
And the group you rejoined the group. First of all, Leo Austell was managing the group for a while.
Right, right.
Do you remember how Leo Austell became the manager?
I don't remember, but I was in the group when Leo first became manager. That's when he was trying to get Solly. Solly was living on 46 and Evans. We actually went over to Solly's house, and he was trying to get with the group, but Leo wanted him with us, and he had heard about my background being in and out the group two or three times, that he didn't think I was serious enough to be in the group. So that's when I started getting my life together, and I was out again, and that's when they kept the Chanteur, and that's when they made Wishing Well.
Okay, and then you were already five guys, and while you were with the group, you went to Solly's house with them.
Right, right.
So he was trying to replace you, and you were there with them.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
So how did you end up getting back with the group? Did they put Solly out of the group, or what was the story? Did Solly leave the group himself?
I don't remember too much what happened, why Solly left, but I do know 1960. I told you I got married young. I was 18. My wife was 16, and Clarence and Gene, they gave me a bachelor party. And I think right after I got married, I rejoined the group again. And so it had to be in 60 or 61. And then we became the presidents.
Okay, so Sally wasn't in the group for very long.
Right, right.
So you rejoined the group and became the presidents. And was Leo Austell still your manager at that point?
I think so, but he was kind of whiffy then.
So then you ended up signing to Mercury Records and cutting this record, Pots and Pans.
Right.
Okay, well, let's play the record and talk some more.
Okay.
So this is the Chanteurs' second, well, they actually the Chanteurs cut another record, which is really rare, but this is the sort of the second record, the first record as the presidents.
Right.
Which is Pots and Pans. So here it is.
I won't spend the rest of my life taking care of you. No. I won't spend the rest of my day taking care of you. No. Home from work, boy, you just sit and look. You say you're tired, oh, so tired, you get over that stove and cook. Like three. Oh, yeah. The very last time you saw your feet was when we walked down the aisle. So I'm gonna tie you to the back of my car and let you run it off for a while. Send my legs to make me. And don't you ever get beside yourself and try to bend your hand at me.
Okay, that was just the Presidents out of Chicago with Pots and Pans. And if you're just tuning in, I have member of the Presidents, Burt Bowens, who is talking about the story of his group. So that record, I'm pretty sure it came out in 1962. So you rejoined the Chanteurs after Sally McElroy left the group.
Right.
And they changed your name to the Presidents. And you cut that record at for Mercury Records. Did it get play in Chicago?
Yeah. I heard it, and we thought we were on our way. But then that was it. Stop playing it. Called my mother. It was quite a few people telling, I heard the record, Bert. I heard the record. They're telling Gene. In fact, I heard it once. They when WLS was playing everything, we had heard it, and I was hugging my mother. Yeah, we thought we were going somewhere. And I'm still sitting here talking to Bob.
Are you saying I'm nobody?
Oh, you are. Come on, Bob. If I look, Bob, I dealing with you. I have had an hour of fame instead of 15 minutes. Because you did a piece on me on Chickagogo.
Well, that was my friend, actually.
Yeah, well, you were the cause of it. You were the cause of it. I got exposure then. I felt like a star.
Behind local Chicago cable TV.
Yeah. But I appreciate that. I really do.
Okay, so that record, did you do any shows as the Presidents?
We did one, a promo to promote the record. That's when the great cowboy Gene Autry, he had a place called the Sahara Inn on Mannheim Road, and it was a hot spot. That's when all these clubs and like Las Vegas style clubs, and I got a chance to see him once, but he, you know, just a quick glance. But it was a promo party for Pots and Pans. And I got to meet quite a few people. Boots Randolph, the one that made Ahab the Arab. Quincy Jones was there.
So it was like a Mercury Records
promo
party.
Right, yeah, it was like a Mercury Records promo party. And, you know, we were just out there. We sang a song and everything. And it was just a beautiful experience. You know, when people find out what I went through, and I've never tried to hide it, but they always came up with the question, why did you quit? I mean, we had to go separate ways. I got married. I always say this as a joke or a pun. My wife was kicking one, carrying one, and pushing one. And after the record, we started having a few more problems because my wife was having these kids, and I had a real job. And they wanted me to sing and go through change with them, but I was looking at these crumb crushers on the floor, and all of them came back. Clarence, Squirrel, Eddie, Gene, what you gonna do? And I told him, I said, look on the floor. Like I said, my wife was carrying one, pushing one, and kicking one. And I said, I got a real job. I can't hang. You know, it wasn't any friendship loss, but I had to choose between making real money or playing that chitlin circuit, as they called it back then. And come to find out, a few years later, I was selling records for an old record seller named Jimmy Manette. He had about seven chains in Chicago, and he had one right there on 63rd and Stony, almost next to the old Greyhound bus station. And I used to play records. I had a speaker outside the door, and I used to play records. But somebody found out I was playing records there, and they told me that Gene, Creedell, Marshall, and Squirrel, they were living in back of Hyde Park. And I said, oh, okay, this had to be 65, 66. And I said, oh, I'm going to surprise them, you know. So I locked up for a few minutes and went to visit them. And lo and behold, four fellas, one room, no electricity, rags tied around their heads. You know, this is something I couldn't go through. But I'm glad they persevered and stuck with it. But I couldn't do it because I had to have a real job. You know, we hugged and everything, and the rest is history. First they were the highlights, then they were the shylights.
So pretty much the two groups that used to be rival groups kind of joined up together to become the highlights, and they had like the mix song and I'm So Jealous, and then they became the shylights. But one thing I got to ask is, there was one more Chanteur's record that came out after the President's record, the Grizzly Bear.
Which
was their biggest record, actually.
Right.
So you had left the Presidents.
Right.
And they changed their name back to the Chanteurs.
Right.
And they went to VJ Records.
I didn't know anything about that because I was feeding them crumb crusts.
So what happened was they were serious about doing music full time, and they were just like, "Are you with us doing music full time?" And you're like, "I have to raise my kids."
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
You know, when people find out that, you know, that I was dealing with Gene and Squirrel, and, you know, I wasn't trying to hide it or anything, but it would be like, why did you leave them? Why did you leave them? I did what I had to do. It was mutual. We remained friends. And Gene and I kept in contact, Squirrel, Clarence. In fact, Gene is my oldest boy's godfather. And me and Squirrel were so tight. You know, when we were chanteurs, the early chanteurs, teenagers, we used to spend the night over each other's house. You know, that's how close we were.
Yeah, I mean, and it really took almost 10 more years for them to become big stars.
Right.
So
right.
They really were struggling for a long time.
That's what I'm saying. You do what you got to do. Some people ought to think before they ask. You know, they ask, why did you leave them? I did what I had to do, and they did what they had to do. You know, I've always kept up with them. I bought most of their records and everything. And my wife, she Squirrel's voice was so distinct in the background. She knew his voice right off, and no slight on you, darling. Rest in peace. But my wife was tone deaf. but she knew Squirrel's voice. She knew Squirrel's voice. Like a lot of times after they became the Shylights, they would do shows in the mall on 35th Street, and you know how they have those big speakers out, and they just be blasting, and you could hear them the first time. My wife heard them, and I knew they was gonna be up there. My wife say, "Come on, let's go see Squirrel." You know, so I say, "Okay." We walked up there, and the first thing he did, the Squirrel saw me. He told Marshall, "Marshall, there's Bert. There's Bert." He did that two or three times when I went to see him up there. You know, and they would have the dressing room. They would rent give them one of the apartments over in Lake Meadows. You know, to change clothes in. And that's where I moved to in 83, after I moved out to projects on 39th and Lake Park. And I've been in Lake Meadows ever since. But I used to see Squirrel quite frequently when they used to come over there. And we kept in contact. We kept in contact even though we didn't see each other. I went to see him at the Regal once when they was... When they were hitting their peak. My kids went to see him first. They were young and they were seeing messages by Gene, Eugene Record. Gene said, come see him. But it was a little thing I had between one of them. I won't mention no name. I'm not going to see him. So I finally broke down and went to see him, went back in the dressing room, backstage with him and everything. And we renewed old acquaintances and everything, and I was happy for him, still happy for him.
Okay, well, I'm glad that you were able to come down and share your part of the story, mm-hmm. and the early story of the Shylights and the Chanteurs and sort of the formation of the group and your little piece of the story. So I really appreciate you coming down and telling your story.
I want to thank you for having me here, and it's really ironic. You know, when Gene passed and Squirrel passed, Squirrel, Robert Earl, in the Shylights, he called me 2 weeks after he had got diagnosed. You know, and that's the true meaning of friendship. You know, even though you don't see anybody, you stay in contact. And that's what Eugene Record and Robert Earl Squirrel Lester did to me. They never forgot me. I never forgot them. And I'm glad Bob dedicated this show to Eugene Reckon and Robert Earl Lester, because them were two of the closest friends that I ever had in my life. And the closest friend I have now is Clarence Johnson. And he's not doing too well, but I want to say hello, Clarence, if you're listening. I love you, and to hang in there. And thank you, Bob, for everything.
Thanks again for coming down. I really, really appreciate you telling your story.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so this last record that I'm going to play is the one record that the Chanteurs did right after you left the group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was became their biggest hit. This is the dance record that they did called The Grizzly Bear.
Right.
Come on, everybody, yeah.